You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information.
30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30,
What's up, everybody? Welcome to 30 Flirty and Thriving. We've taken a little bit of a hiatus for about 2 months now, but we are back. We're back and we have co-hosts. One of them is not here yet. But we have, what I want to do is go ahead and introduce you to our co-host, Jaylen, and give her an opportunity to introduce herself and tell us a bit about herself so we can get familiar with her. And then we are going to jump right into the conversation today, which is really just addressing all the craziness that's been going on lately with the R. Kelly saga. Chris Brown just went to jail today and allegations of rape charges in Paris. There was the girl who was allegedly raped on Facebook Live. And so we have our expert here, Native Child Brown, a.k.a. Kelly Mays, to talk about what it's like to be in that type of situation from an expert's opinion and kind of what goes through somebody's mind or, you know, what someone's going through when they're subjected to that type of assault. So I'm going to go ahead and let Jaylen take over now and introduce herself.
Hey, everybody. It's Jaylen. I'm coming to you from Jackson, Michigan. I am a college student along with working, and I have a 4-year-old son. I'm just excited to be here today and to be a co-host and learn some new things and, you know, and put my perspective on some things as well. And I'm just glad that I'm here and Amber chose me. I've been stalking her low-key for a minute. So this is a blessing. So I'm glad to be here, and I hope you guys enjoy the show.
Thank you so much, and I'm so excited. Here go, Tisha. So I'm so excited to have two co-hosts. I feel like it's going to really help balance the show out and bring some different dynamic to the show and also take some of the weight off of me, because hosting a show completely on my own is a lot to bear. But I do feel like this will help kind of bring some different dynamics to y'all. So I'm going to give Tisha a minute to get settled. And meanwhile, Kelly can go ahead and introduce herself to everyone.
Hello, everyone. My name, I wear a lot of different hats, so it depends on what hat I have on, depends on what name I'm giving you. My professional name, if you want to write me a check, is Kelly Mays. I'm a licensed therapist. I'm a trauma-informed therapist. I work with kiddos and adults. My other name, also, if you want to write me a check, is Native Child Brown. I am a poet. I process a lot of trauma on stage. I am a slam poet. I've been doing slam for now about 7-8 years, but I've been writing since I could hold a pen. So, but I'm glad to be here and kind of give you guys some perspectives about sexual assault and trauma.
I'm so happy to have Kelly here. Actually, I've heard her before, some of her spoken word, and she is incredible. So if y'all ever get a chance, you have to listen to her live.
5 exclamation points. Incredible.
Yes. She is. For real. So very, very good. So, Tisha, I'm going to go ahead and let you jump on and just introduce yourself to all the guests.
Newest co-host here at 30 Flirty and Thriving.
Hey.
Sorry. Look, sorry I'm late. 696 is a sheet of ice right now.
Yes, I
slid all the way here, and I'm blessed to have made it. Yeah. I'm beyond this.
Anybody on the roads in Michigan right now, be safe.
Yes.
Won't he do it?
Yes, he will. All right now. So, Tisha actually is a host of another podcast called Single Versus Married. So she's experienced, and she's had me as a guest on her show, whatever. She does a good job. So I'm excited to have her as part of this show. So we're going to go ahead and jump right into it. So let me first ask you, now Jaylen, you have to give her a little bit of a break today, because she has been on a social media hiatus for all of January.
I have been too, though. Honestly, I've taken a break.
Yeah.
I had to kind of, yeah. Yeah. Trying necessary. To get my life right.
Right. I get it. So they might not be fully informed to everything that we're going to talk about today. It is in depth, but we're going to talk about the R. Kelly saga. First of all, who all has seen the documentary? Anybody in this room?
Who hasn't seen it?
I have bits and pieces.
Seen it.
You
have
what?
Not seen it. I have not seen it.
Did you do that by choice?
I did that by choice.
Okay.
Okay.
Yes. And okay. I do, before we get really into this, I do want to kind of make a disclaimer that this is going to be a very intense conversation about some maybe triggering things. So if you are a victim or have been a victim in the past of sexual assault, abuse, domestic violence, any of the above, I definitely recommend that you kind of proceed with caution, maybe have someone of support there with you, and just know that we'll be talking about a lot of things that might be triggering for you. So I want to make sure that you are safe and that you're comfortable with this conversation. So that was really, I guess, a conscious effort on your part to make sure that you didn't watch it, because you have survived your own trauma, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, based on everything that you've heard and what you know of, and being a survivor and also being, you know, an expert kind of in the field of getting over or getting through, working through trauma, what is your kind of take on everything that's going on? There's so much conversation about the girls and why did they stay and why did more girls come and everything. Like, what are your thoughts on that?
So, first, I want to just preface, like, when the documentary first came out, I opened up a conversation at work because I work with therapists, and I thought it was really important. I don't know if you remember the anchor that
yes,
completed the suicide. We talked about it. They sent out an email company wide. Was like, hey, this is going on. And I was really troubled that my company didn't address it by email about this documentary.
You're about Jessica Starr?
Yes.
Yeah.
That my company didn't address in an email about, you know, hey, this documentary is coming out, you know, if your clients come in triggered or if you're triggered, you know, we should address it, we should talk about it. And so I had went to my supervisor and I was like, you know, the last couple of days I've seen posts, I've seen conversations, I've been in conversations where there's been a lot of victim blaming, where there's been a lot of misinformation, and it's really affected me. And we talked and had like really great dialogue, and then she brought it to everybody at our meeting, at our staff meeting, and I thought that it was a great opportunity to kind of talk about the invisibility of Black women, you know, when it comes to, and women in general, you know, when it comes to sexual assault. And the problem that I had, and I keep saying this over and over again, that people are looking at the documentary Surviving R. Kelly as if it's about R. Kelly. It's not about R. Kelly. It's about the survivors and their journey and their voice and having a platform of their to say, this is what I went through, this is what I survived, and I'm still going.
And how scary is it that most women, or many women, I don't even remember the exact number, you might have better figures, don't report these kind of things?
So I think it's like one third of women report, the rest do not.
Because it's so scary, because look at, they came forward, they put their face forward, they went over and re-detailed really graphic experiences that they went through, just to have the entire world shit on them and be like, well, you're stupid, why did you stay? Why did you put yourself in that situation?
Yeah,
like, right. He's R. Kelly. I don't believe you.
I mean, like, I don't see it any different as if, you know, R. Kelly was your uncle, you know, or your cousin, or, you know, like, growing up, you know, I heard the term a lot, kissing cousins, you know, and you've heard that term, kissing cousins, you know, and that it was, and it made it kind of acceptable for, you know, a cousin, you know, to violate you in any kind of way, and that it was comfortable. It was okay. It's okay. It's just your cousin. It's okay. You know, he just has a little crush on you. No, it's not okay.
No,
and I see it in the same way. Like, it's still victim blaming. I had a conversation with my husband and a friend of his, and we were talking about sexual assault, and we were talking about victim blaming, and they, you know, were saying some things that were very disturbing to me, you know, and I had a moment, I had to sit back for a moment, and I cried a little bit. And my husband was like, wow, this is really affecting you, saying things like, well, you know, a girl shouldn't go into a bar with a short skirt on and get drunk, you know, because like she's not asking for it, but she should be cautious. And I'm like, well, the thing is, a girl should be able to go into a bar with a short skirt and get drunk. It's okay. You know, the thing is, like, it's not, the victim shouldn't put themselves in place to be victimized. Rapists shouldn't rape.
Right. Absolutely. Right. Absolutely. Right. So that brings me to the Facebook Live rape. So I actually, like, went all Facebook PI on the shit. And I was, like, looking at the victim's Facebook page, her friend, her ex-husband. I was looking at everything. I watched the video. I did everything. I was trying to figure out, like, but because here's the thing, and the reason that I did all of that, I seen the video before I saw anything else, and the video was clearly rape, period. But then I kept seeing everybody talking about all this other stuff and how she was on a dance floor afterwards, and I was like, okay, let me look further into this. Not that it makes it any different, because at the end of the day, it's still rape, but this is what happened from my investigation, from what I seen. Detective AB. So she was visiting Atlanta by herself. Mm-hmm. She knew a person from Facebook who was also in Atlanta at the time. They weren't friends, but they were cool. But the girl who was also visiting was like, hey, there's this August Alsina concert. It's cheap, whatever. You should go check that out. So the victim was like, okay, cool, I'll go check that out. She got there before the other girl. So she's tagging her on Facebook like, hey, come out. Are you coming? Get ready. Woo, woo, woo. So the girl, in the meantime, the victim is in Atlanta at this club by herself. She's dancing, drinking, having a good time. And she's Facebook Live-ing it, I assume, because she didn't have anybody there with her. Mm-hmm. She was sharing her experience with her Facebook friends. Mm-hmm. And she was having a good time with some dude dancing. They clearly were having a good time. You could tell throughout the video that she was getting progressively like, okay, you cute and you cool and all, but you're doing too much.
Right.
It was like, mm-hmm. you could see that happening as the video progressed. Then when you get to the actual rape part of the video, you see her go from like having a good time and being a little intoxicated to being completely out of her element. Like, couldn't, her face, like everything about her was just like, something is not right. So whether she, that drink hit her super quick, or she was slipped something, I don't know, but definitely something occurred that caused her to go from like just a little tipsy to whoa. Mm-hmm. And then he raped her. And during the rape, she was screaming, stop. Somebody help me. Somebody please help me. You could see the tears streaming down her cheek, and she was clearly not having a good time. Mm-hmm. However, the Facebook Live continued. Eventually, it stopped. Apparently, once it was finished, she carried on about her night. Her friend from Facebook ended up getting there, got some drinks. They were hanging out. She ended up participating in some twerk contest or whatever. But meanwhile, she's telling her friend, they try to rape me. They try to rape me. Like, every time she got an opportunity, she was trying to tell her they tried to rape me. And the friend's like, what are you talking about? Who tried to rape you? Is this your friend, or did you come with him? Like, she was confused asking. The friend was asking questions like, did you come with him? Are you guys together? Mm-hmm. And she's like, nah. And he's like, yeah. So she's like, something doesn't make sense. Mm-hmm. So eventually, you know, she says, well, no, he tried to rape me. And she's like, did you try to rape her? And so the guy gets all pissed off, like, fuck you, bitch, da-da-da-da-da, going, like, crazy on her. Mm-hmm. And at that point, the girl realized, wow, like, something really happened. And at this point, she didn't know anything about the video. She didn't know anything that had happened. She was just like, why does she keep saying that they tried to rape her? Who is she talking about? What's going on? But obviously, the girl was intoxicated, whether she had also been slipped drugs or whatever. Point being is, now on social media, everybody, because after that, people posted a video of her in the twerk contest, mm-hmm. after the alleged rape. Mm-hmm. Then the husband got online and said, she's lying. She just did this to get back at me, or mad at me, or get me back, or something like that. So now everybody's like, well, she was in there with no panties on. She was in there with a little dress. She went to the club without her friends. She went to the club by herself. She's lying. She wanted it. She was having a good time. She was moaning. All this stuff, right? And even if all of the above are true, she went by herself. She ain't had no panties on. She had a short dress on. She was having a good time. She was drunk, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Guess what? She still said no. She still said stop. Yep. She still screamed. She still said, please help me. So I don't care what else is true. She was raped. She was raped on Facebook Live, period. Mm-hmm. You can't defend that. I don't give a shit what nobody says. Her husband, I don't care. Mm-hmm. It is evident that was real emotion. Mm-hmm. And if you see the video, you know it's real. So have any of y'all seen the video at all?
I haven't, but I do want to chime in just for a second.
Yeah.
I think that it's the reactions behind what happened is why people were probably saying it. I did not see the video, but if something like that happened to me, I'm beating his ass. Let's just be clear. So there is no more dancing. There is no more party. There is no twerking afterwards. There's nothing more that can be done after someone does that to me. So I guess when you look at yourself and you try to put yourself in those shoes and you say, well, this was my, would be my reaction to this. Mm-hmm. You may have those type of responses and those type of comments because you're saying, I could never just carry on my night like nothing ever happened and still mention it.
But
like,
how would
I need it? Can I say something?
Absolutely,
on that?
Yeah.
Like, even with her going on with her night, like, that's probably the first time that that's happened. And she doesn't know how to react. I mean, she's out of her element. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah, we would be ready to fight. But at the same time, people are different. And with that being said, like, she, that happened to her. So she don't got no family out there. She, her friend is not there. And this dude is still tagging along with her.
Yeah.
So it's like, and she's drunk. So it's like,
and she may or may not have been slipped a pill. That's what they're investigating. They said somebody, I think it was either her or her friend, said that the tox results after she went to the police and everything, like, showed that she had been slipped something.
Yeah.
So if that's
true, she wasn't really in her right mind to, I need to get out of here and go to the police, or I need to get out of here, period. She's still thinking like, okay, that happened, but she's not really analyzing what actually happened.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, and that's like a body's self-defense also, you know, when protecting itself from trauma, you know, you're going to go into survival mode. So for her, survival mode might be twerk contest. You know, for her, survival mode might be, let me wait until my friend's here so I can feel safer. Survival mode might be, I'm going to tell her a little bit of the conversation, a little bit more and a little bit more, and a little bit more, until I feel safe enough till someone says, okay, let's do something about that. You know, I've treated clients, and this is not present clients, so I'm not violating HIPAA and I'm not telling you, but I've treated clients who have been sexually assaulted at work, continued, you know, completed their work day, went and picked up their child, cooked dinner, didn't wait and waited till the next day, and then reported the rape. You know, so like, you know, every victim survivor is different, and how they kind of navigate through the day to deal with the trauma is different. How they respond to the trauma is different.
Because, and how often do women think like, well, maybe I did something. Maybe absolutely, like the women who had experienced that at work, and they wait until the next day to report. Or for her being like, I was at the club with my panties all, you know what I'm saying? And I had a short dress on and I was having fun with him. And maybe he thought because we was grinding on each other that I wanted it. Like, women often, and maybe men too, but I know in men, it's like every one in four women are sexually assaulted in their lifetime, whereas I think one in nine men. So obviously either it's more prevalent in women or it's more reported in women. But
I'm talking about just reported cases though.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So, you know, I mean, women I think often think, well, I must have did something to provoke it. Maybe I shouldn't say nothing, because even if the woman knows she didn't, it's always that fear of being judged, of things changing, of whatever, whether it's at work or at home. I had a situation when I was about 13 years old. A friend of the family sexually assaulted me, and I didn't say nothing. I woke up, and I was living with them at the time. I didn't say shit to nobody because I knew, for one, I didn't think anyone would believe me. For two, I knew it would change my living situation, and I didn't want to go back to my mom's. So did I put myself in a situation to be sexually assaulted again because I didn't want to go back home? I guess so. But, like, that was, at the time, it felt like the thing that, and I didn't say anything. I think it took me, like, 12 years before I said anything to anyone.
But for you, survival kicked in.
I was just like,
and that's normal, actually. That's normal. You know, and the thing is, like, it's not that you put yourself in a situation to be sexually assaulted again. You know, that person shouldn't have assaulted you in the beginning.
Period.
Period. You know, and I think, like, changing the narrative and getting people to, like, kind of rework their idea and their mentality behind and looking at how sexual assault, you know, is actually the fault of the person who's committing the crime, not the person whose crime is being committed against.
Absolutely.
It's really important.
Because I think that at this point, it's just, it should be common sense, but it's not.
Right.
Obviously, no means no. It doesn't mean I'm playing hard to get. Please try harder. That's not what that means.
And I don't understand why guys think that way. Like, when we say no, it means no. Like,
absolutely,
we're not trying to kiki and flirt and nothing like that. Like, it means no. And especially when you have the serious face, like, no.
Yes. Like,
I'm not doing
cute. You're just being cute with me.
Yeah. Right.
I'm going to try harder.
Right.
I'm going to keep going.
No.
I'm going to keep pushing that envelope.
That's not what that means. And also, sometimes, just not saying yes means no. If you don't have, like, yes, let's do this, or, like, an active reciprocal situation, then it's no.
Right.
You know? Like,
right,
don't do it. And on that conversation, so, like, recently, I posted the other day on Facebook, somebody had sent me a dick pic, which...
Classic.
Fucking hate that I keep having it. We had this conversation on
on my podcast.
What is your life without, you know, one in your lifetime?
So I'm like,
you've arrived.
Yeah.
So I don't get them often. I really don't. It's like once in a blue moon.
before social media, it was Polaroid. So, you know, they'd have to shake the picture.
It was a whole process.
Yeah, and then mail it to you, right?
Yeah. So I'm like, the thing that gets me is maybe we're in a day and age where that is commonplace for people who are talking or engaged in a relationship to trade nude pictures or whatever. Mm-hmm. However, it is never okay under any circumstances in any fucking universe to send somebody an unsolicited picture of your genitalia, period. Mm-hmm. And, you know, of course, like, I cut into him in...
Which, by the way, is still assault. They're still assaulting you.
That's what I'm saying. But that's my point. So if that happened in real life, I was just chilling at homeboy, whipped his thing out, was like, here, look at this. That would be sexual assault your ass could go to jail for. Mm-hmm. But because you slid it in my Snapchat DM in this particular instance, then I'm just like, well, fuck you, you're a piece of shit. And, like, I have to keep it moving. You know what I'm saying? I can do what I can do by trying to blast you on social or whatever. But essentially, if I call the police and do all of this, like, nothing is going to come of that. And so I don't report that. Mm-hmm. I was assaulted. And that is exactly what that is when you send an unsolicited picture of your genitalia to someone. That is assault. Mm-hmm. And it's unacceptable. And too many people engage in this type of behavior these days. And I don't understand why. And I know, like, I joke a lot on social media. I make fun of it. But it's not okay. It's not funny. Mm-hmm. Because for someone who is a survivor of sexual assault and sexual trauma, that is triggering. It can be triggering.
Absolutely.
Can be triggering. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that people take that into account when they're sending this. I don't really understand what the gain is. I would love to have somebody explain to me what the gain is for sending yours.
That's
appendage.
Way out of my realm of expertise.
I was looking at you like, can you tell me something?
I mean, obviously there's some pleasure or something that they get out of it. You know, what it is, it'd probably be on an individual basis on what that person is getting out of it. But it is wrong. It is an assault. You know, you can report it. Mm-hmm. I don't know how far it would go.
Exactly.
Unfortunately, you know, a lot of these things don't get taken seriously, which is unfortunate. But it's the equivalent if you were a minor under 18 and someone sent you something, the police would be right on it. Right?
Yeah, I was going to say,
so it's not any different. It's not any different, you know. And then I think also you can create a space, you know, where you can educate that person, like, you know, this is triggering for me. You don't have to sound like a therapist when you say it, but you can say, like, this is triggering for me. You know, I felt this way when you did this, you know, and give them that language to use. So in the future, when they come across someone and say, oh, she's pretty, let me send her a picture of my penis. You know, maybe they'll think twice.
And maybe I should do it, because right now I just my goal is to just try to, like, emasculate them. And just be like, you stupid bitch. I just, you know, and maybe that's not a great thing to do, but I'm triggered, motherfucker. So my reaction is my reaction. Yeah, I was like, you're lucky this is digital because I wish you wouldn't.
But think, like, he sent you one pic. Think about how many, and you're one person. And if he's that comfortable, think about how many other women he's
sent. Yeah, and that's the thing. And it wasn't, we weren't in the middle of a conversation. I wasn't engaging him or, you know, enticing him to do that. I was just living my life and I wake up like, what, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah,
this person has been, on, you know, connected to me for, I don't know, a good 6 months, a year, however long we've been connected on that particular app. And now all of a sudden, one day you wake up and decide that you think I want to see your shit.
Right.
No. Yeah. So
turn off.
It is.
Yeah.
Complete turn off.
It is. But I've got it. And so I have to ask the women, like, do y'all, are there women out there that entertain this or that think that is appealing? Because I don't know any of them personally, but maybe they do exist. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I'm sure they do.
They're all kinds.
Yeah.
Yep, they're all kinds. All this kinds. Is true.
Some people like cowboy boots. Some people like high heels. You know, it's all kinds.
Uh-huh. Some people like dick pics. Uh-huh. It ain't me. Okay. So today, I saw that Chris Brown was arrested on alleged rape in Paris. Have y'all heard about that at all?
Yes.
I have not.
Yes.
Heard about that.
So here's my thing with Breezy. Damn it. Like, it's like he was such a talented kid, and I don't know if the fame got to him or what happened, but obviously he's fell completely off. And then we're in this culture now where, like, with R. Kelly, it's like, mute R. Kelly, and it's like, okay, shut Chris Brown down and everything. But it's like, how do we as a society, as, like, the general population, assert some sort of standard in how in what we'll accept from the people that are our icons,
right?
Are the people that we look up to for our children, are sometimes their idols, or the people that they worship, like they think they're, you know, they're heroes. How do we start asserting and assessing these standards? We don't know what goes on in their personal lives. And some of them, so my thing with R. Kelly is that I had a conversation before I watched the documentaries, like, and I was like, I don't care what them documentaries say. He's a musical genius. I'm not going to stop listening to his music because he makes good music.
Yeah.
And then I watched the documentaries and I was like, I'm deleting all his shit off my ass right now. I'm not listening to no more R. Kelly. If I hear that shit on at a club, I'm plugging my ears. Man. I will not support. Like, yeah, I was, because I was moved by that. But it's been going on for over two decades. So how... So what, now because we find out, then what do? He's ingrained in American culture now.
So from a clinical point of view.
Yes, yeah, so I'm looking at you.
I think it's really important that people understand that monsters and men can exist in the same space. You know, and that, yeah, I like his music. And I mean, I ain't gonna lie. You know, in the 90s, you know, I was a teenager in the 90s. So I bumped a lot of R. Kelly. You know, no pun intended. You know, I listened to a lot of R. Kelly, you know, but understanding that, you know, men can have, you know, these horrible things about them, you know, and they can also be talented. They can also, you know, monsters can be, you know, hey, Lucifer was one of the most prettiest angels of them all. Okay.
Yes.
And that also understanding that abuse is about power and control, period, you know, and because I've seen the comments, oh, they can have whatever woman they want, or, you know, I'm bet, you know, women are throwing it at them. I was like, but that's not something that they can control, you know, and introducing language in the beginning when our kids are young, and explaining to them and talking to them about things like consent, you know, things about, you know, it's okay, you know, that you don't have to be the strong Black man. You don't have to be the strong Black woman. You don't have to be those things. You can experience all these emotions and still be in control of who you are as a person. You know, it can be really helpful.
And I think there are different victims with the R. Kelly, because you had your minors who did not know what was going on, who in Sparkle's case, she introduced her niece to him. So she actually brought this into this her niece's life. So it's kind of, I look at the situation as he's just wrong, flat out wrong, period. He should not be dealing with any minors whatsoever. At he should all. Not be doing what he's doing. He should not be the sexual acts. If you're over 18, if that's something you're into, then so be it. But again, you know, he started off with 12, 13, 14 year olds. And then we have victims that we're talking about. They knew this story. They knew what he was doing and they wanted to be with him. So you have different groups.
Right.
So you have to assess the situation as a whole, but at the same time, recognizing there are different victims in this realm of the R. Kelly saga. You know, the minors didn't know, but the 30-year-old DJ, you know what I mean? She did know. She said it. I mean, and maybe she didn't know the extent of what was going on behind closed doors, but she have heard, and most people who even come from Chicago, lived in Chicago, they all heard about what R. Kelly was doing. Most people had this already in the back of their minds. They just want to block it out because they like the music, like you said.
Yeah. Right.
But they knew R. Kelly was into something behind closed doors. So you kind of know, you know, you are treading.
I would say be real careful, though, when you're talking about identifying victims, that you're not victim blaming, though. Just like when you're using the language and talking about, you know, like the older victims, you know, that you're not saying.
And I'm not saying that it's the victim's fault. I'm saying that the victim knew about what was going on with R. Kelly when they wanted to actually be introduced, when they wanted to go out with him. So I'm saying there's different situations. You had the minors that didn't have a choice. And then you had the adults who actually wanted to meet him, who actually said, I want to meet him, I want to go out with him, you know, and maybe that to the extent of what he was doing, they didn't ask for that. That's what I mean. So you do, so he's definitely wrong in everything that came after that. Because just because you want to go out with somebody or be with somebody don't mean you deserve to be sexually assaulted. So mm-hmm. those are two different things. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying that the minor situation and an adult situation is kind of different. Mm-hmm. And we got to look at it different because anybody under 18 as a minor, he should not even be talking to mm-hmm. in those in that language. So this is kind of different. So you know, it's actually legally wrong under 18.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I was thinking about that earlier, Kelly, and I was going to ask you about that because after the documentary aired, R. Kelly had an event in Chicago that mm-hmm. like was completely sold out. People came out. All the girls were like, I want to see if it's true. Like they were wilding. So clinically, what is that? What is that?
Yeah.
That's a fan. I mean, you talk about, unfortunately, you know, we like to think that, yeah, he was a monster to her, but he won't be to me. You know, okay. Oh, maybe he assaulted her, but he might not assault me. Maybe he beat on her, but he's not going to beat on me.
Maybe I can change him. Maybe I can make him better.
Maybe this won't happen to me. Maybe I have just like magical vagina, yeah. you know, and mm-hmm. it won't happen, you know. But that's not the case. Like, again, the axis, rape, sexual assault, domestic violence, they're all about power and control.
Right. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of women feel like I can change him. Mm-hmm. I can be different. He'll be different with me. Maybe mm-hmm. he used to abuse his ex-girlfriend or his ex-wife. Maybe he mm-hmm. has been accused of sexual assault in the past. But that was her. Mm-hmm. I'm different. I can help him mm-hmm. be better. Most women have that mentality for whatever reason. It's a gift and a curse.
Call it broken toy syndrome. Yeah. Is actually what it is. It's like, you know, like I always say this. I did a speech and I said, I inherited the disposition of collecting broken toys from my mother. You know, the toys are already broken when I take them out the box, but I swear I'm Geppetto. I can stitch them back together. I can make them into a real man. Mm-hmm. You know, but
that
I mean,
was powerful.
Yeah, it was. I wish I
had some of my own. You know, but like we have that, we're socialized as women to believe that we're supposed to be, you know, like if you think about chess, the game of chess, right? Mm-hmm. What's the most powerful piece?
The queen.
And the queen's job is to do what? Protect the king. And that's what we're socialized to believe. Protect the king at all costs, even if it means sacrificing what? The queen. Yes. You know, and that's how we are bred. That's bred in our DNA. And we don't realize that that's bullshit. Mm-hmm. You know, like self-care and taking care and survival starts here first. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't get from an empty cup. Right. You know, but unfortunately, you know, what we do is like we're sacrificing, we're giving things that we don't have, giving things that we have, borrowing things to give, you know, and we keep giving and giving and giving. And like, wait, why isn't he changing? Because it's not you. You know, a man, an abusive man can go to work, smile, say hi to Jimmy, John, Bo, you know, ask for a raise, go through traffic. Somebody might cut him off. He'll say, my bad, you know, go to the grocery store, spend a little too much. It's okay. He gonna put it on his debit card, come home. And the focal of his anger is who? His partner. Mm. He's that controlled where he's going through the day and not no wrath whatsoever, but comes home and beats on his partner or assaults his partner. Yeah.
Which is crazy because so many abusers I feel like we hear about, whether on the news or even if you know in your personal life, is like, I can't believe he would do that.
Exactly.
He's such a great guy.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Damn, that shit was powerful for me because I know in real life people who where I just I can't. Sometimes I still have a hard time wrapping my mind around, like, how does the whole world go on? Mm-hmm. How does the whole world go on and this person live and eat and breathe and sleep and just be fine? Mm-hmm. And yet there are victims who have been destroyed effectively mm-hmm. by this person's actions. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. it's still hard to wrap my mind around. Like, I just, but the truth is, yeah, they can still go about and be a great, like you said, a man and a monster can reside all in the same person.
Yeah, mm-hmm. absolutely.
Which is crazy.
Absolutely.
So mm-hmm. you posted something on social earlier that I really felt. It says, wanted a non-abusive ally to help me move through any, wanted a non-abusive ally to help me move through my trauma. A non-abusive ally to help me move through my trauma. Sincerely, a survivor. Yes, it is. Because the way that I interpreted that mm-hmm. is that we often, I don't want to say cling to, but sometimes when we find someone that we can relate to, or whether it's a partner or a friend or whoever, and we think that they can kind of be our ally and be our friend and help us
fix us.
But then they also can be abusive.
Re-traumatize you.
Yeah. So you're helping me get through my past trauma, but at the same time, you're re-traumatizing me.
Absolutely.
And
absolutely.
I think this is apparent in women or in people who get in abusive situation after abusive situation, or maybe it's different kinds of abuse, but you don't know to recognize that particular kind of abuse because you're used to dealing with this type of abuse, but this person is helping you get through that abuse, but they're abusing you in a whole different way. That's so when I read that, I was just like, I was like a non-abusive ally. So please don't add to my trauma.
And you have the right to say that, and to ask that from partners, from friends, from relationships, from people at work. You have the right to ask that, you know, and to demand that from people, you know. And it's not about I attract abusive partners, you know. It's about I should select people who are not abusive, you know. It's like, you know, switching the focus and the narrative, you know, and instead of saying, you know what, it's me. No, it's not me. It's my selection process. Let me tweak it.
Right. Because it's not necessarily, you probably attract a lot of people, but you decided to select the ones that you feel more comfortable with the abusers because you're used to being abused. You know those who traumatize you, whether consciously.
That's your quote unquote norm.
Absolutely. Yes. So it's an unconscious choice that you make. It signals going off in your brain that you don't even recognize are there. On the outside, he appears to be a great guy, the same great guy that everybody thinks is a great guy when he's at home behind closed doors beating your ass.
Right.
So you seeing all of that, but your mind intuitively knows and is picking up signals from his abusive or traumatic nature. And then you end up in another abusive situation. So you have an ally, an abusive ally, helping you get through your form. That is powerful for me because I feel like people who have been through, you know, whether it's childhood trauma or if it's early adulthood trauma or whatever it may be, and then they almost subconsciously find themselves on this quest to find someone to help them move through some of this pain and trauma, continuously re-traumatizing themselves by dealing with more abusive people.
That includes professionals too. You know, I mean, I've been in situations where I've talked to peers, and we've talked about, you know, helping clients process trauma and trauma narratives, you know, and sometimes, you know, their responses to that client's trauma, you know, is so indifferent, and you're like, wow, and you're supposed to be helping them. You know, so like also, you know, that includes like when you go and seek help, you know, and finding a clinician or finding a support person, you know, to ask appropriate questions and look for someone who has trauma training, you know, is really helpful in kind of making your way through that journey. So
absolutely. I'm going to go ahead and show y'all the call in number. In case y'all want to call in, and if you have anything to add to this conversation, the number is 248-579-5295. That's for our live viewers. The number is 248-579-5295. We've got about, I don't know, 10, 15 more minutes until we wrap up. But I want to give you guys the opportunity to kind of add your insight or anything that y'all want to discuss or talk about or any thoughts that you had while we were discussing some of this stuff. I think that it's a conversation that we need to continue to have that we should not shy away from, because I feel like, you know, trying to pretend like R. Kelly never existed or isn't always going to be a part of American culture is ridiculous. We can't just mute him and he's going to go away. Like, what he did is very real. The people that he did it to are always going to have this to deal with. And we have to somehow deal with the fact that just like children who have had family members who have abused them have to grow up and figure out, how do you deal with this person? Whether they're your abuser or not, they're still your uncle or your dad or your whoever. How do you deal with that? Well, he's still R. Kelly. So how do we deal with that? And I think we need to continue to have these conversations openly and move through them, because I do feel like we're in a shift of times, like you were saying earlier. Like, we had this mindset of the queen is supposed to protect the king, and even at, you know, all costs, even sacrificing herself. But you said it's bullshit, and you're right. Women don't have to. I think women are starting to realize that now. We're becoming more self-sufficient. Before, we used to aspire to marry because we needed a man to provide and protect us. We don't need that anymore. We can provide
and protect
ourselves.
It'd be nice, but
it is nice. Nice. We would appreciate it.
Shout out to my husband.
But We don't need it.
Right.
And for a very long time, we needed it. Mm-hmm. Like, and that's what it was. So now that we're kind of approaching this, you know, shift in time where it's like, whoa, actually, we're pretty damn smart. We're pretty self-sufficient ourselves. Mm-hmm. We don't need them. It would be nice. We would like to have that. Mm-hmm. There is attributes that men add. I feel like women definitely could use and vice versa. But hopefully we're moving in a direction where this doesn't have to continue to be such a prevalent conversation or hidden. Because the thing about it is back in the day, my experience and my research and everything that I've learned is that the shit happened in homes, like sexual abuse mm-hmm. and physical abuse happened in homes all the time.
And I think it's like 40% of victims are so yeah. known to their predator.
And that's reported. Yeah, and that's damn reported. Near half the time, half the population or whatever. So this was like a normal thing, but no one ever talked about it. Mm-hmm. It didn't get talked about. Mm-hmm. It was just like, hey, sister, avoid Uncle Joe. He touches me. Or one person would kind of like take the brunt of the abuse to protect their other mm-hmm. siblings mm-hmm. or family or whoever. And then nobody ever said anything about mm-hmm. it. Mm-hmm. Because it was, I think, the family dynamic where that person was needed. They provided for the mm-hmm. family or whatever. It's mm-hmm. like, I can't. If a child was to go and tell their mother that their father abused them or assaulted them, the mother would be like, well, he pays the bills and he feeds us. So yeah. what do you want me to do?
And that happens more than what I even care to say. You know, that there is that decision gets made where your trauma is not as important as my marriage, you know, mm-hmm. or your trauma is not so as much sad, important yeah. as my relationship with my brother or my cousin or, you know, or my employer, you know, which is unfortunate.
It really is.
So that brings me to a question. I have a really good, she's a Facebook friend, somebody that I kind of grew up knowing from Lansing who had went through an experience, and she's well documented. She speaks on it. She wrote a song about it, all this stuff about her father was sexually abusive to her, and she has since forgiven him, moved through it, found God, has a good relationship with her father and the rest of her family. What is that process like? Is that even possible? Like, what does that look like, being able to move through something like that, Kelly?
So is it possible? Absolutely. Is it easy? No. The first thing is just acknowledging your pain, which is where a lot of survivors stop, you know, because they don't want to, they block themselves off, you know, they use all kind of unhealthy coping skills, to numb themselves from the pain. So like the first step is definitely acknowledging your pain, acknowledging that this happened, and having someone say, you know what, I believe you, you know, and then working through that pain and working through that trauma. I could throw like a whole lot of stuff at you, like cognitive mm-hmm. behavioral therapy, medication and a blend of psychotherapy is helpful to ease symptoms, but it takes time. I mean, a survivor could take a year and feel better, or 5 or 6 decades and feel better. You know, it just depends on the person and their support system that they have. But is it possible? Absolutely.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I feel like a lot of people carry that trauma and they don't find that closure. They don't find, and in order to move on, and they continue to kind of almost self-sabotage. You know what I mean?
It's hard. And when you're dealing with somebody who's trying to work through trauma, there's always triggers, you know, and triggers are things that remind them of the trauma. For me, I talk about, like I was in an abusive relationship for 5 years, and I talk about, I can't handle men's voices too loud around me. So, you know, my husband, he's very boisterous. He's very loud, you know, and the first time we went out together and he was talking with his friends, you know, and black men talk loud. They are loud, and they're, you know, and their energy and is always up on 100, and they were so loud, and they weren't arguing. They were just loud talking to each other, and it triggered something in me, and I got frightened and I wanted to leave, and he couldn't understand, like, well, what's wrong with you? And I had to explain to him, like, I don't do well with, you know, men yelling around me. And, you know, and after a while, you know, he's like, oh, wow, this is really a thing. You know, and I had to do a lot of psychoeducation with him and really explain to him and point these things out to where you know, when his friends come around, hey, dog, my wife really don't like it when y'all raise your voices. Mm-hmm. Can y'all keep it down? You know, but he respects that that's a thing for me. Mm-hmm. And he creates a space that's safe for me so that I don't have to be triggered. And then on the other side, you know, I work through that trauma, you know, with the clinician myself.
Right. Mm-hmm. That's right. Good. Yeah, I think that's hard. That's really good that you got someone that you're able to communicate that mm-hmm. to and that they understand. Mm-hmm. I feel like us also important as a victim is to understand what your triggers are. So Absolutely. Whether you need the help of a therapist or you just start to self-analyze and say, okay, now I realize that every time this happens, mm-hmm. I mm-hmm. respond this mm-hmm. way. Mm-hmm. It's important to understand that because, and even something, that's why at the beginning of the show I said, you know, this might be triggering. Sometimes just a conversation, if I'm explaining something about a girl being raped and you've been raped, that could bring back your own experience and cause you to be triggered. And however your response is to that, whether you shut down, whether you get frightened, whether you cry or get emotional, or you mm-hmm. decide to go drink, or if mm-hmm. you have like a coping mechanism, that's something that you would want to like really pay attention to identify.
Right. That's true.
Absolutely. I think also too, what's important is that there's a difference between like, because people look at, well, you look fine, you know, mm-hmm. but emotional scars can run the gamut. Mm-hmm. They can present in all kinds of ways, and they can be really unhealthy. Like for me, my daughter's father, was really fit. He's a really fit guy, you know, and he was really insistent about me, you know, staying fit and losing weight. And, you know, and I was like, I was bad too. I was like running like 15 miles a week and, you know, in the gym 3-4 hours a day, you know. And then when our relationship, he went to jail for domestic battery. When we broke up, I gained a lot of weight. I ate and ate and ate, you know, because like to me, like as unattractive as I can make myself, then that means I don't attract another abuser, mm-hmm. you know. But in my head, that made sense, mm-hmm. you know. And like even now, I still struggle, you know. Which my husband, he loves all of this, hey. you know. But even now, you know, I still struggle. But I know that that's a trigger for me. You know, my relationship with food mm-hmm. is a trigger for me. So I eat right. because it makes me feel safe. But recognizing that, you know, and being able to process that, you know, will help you move through your trauma.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. I think that's an important thing. Again, is just to recognize what your triggers are.
Absolutely.
I'm thinking as we're having this conversation, I'm like, dang, okay, so
you checking this?
I am. I'm like, yep. I tend to shut down a lot when things trigger me, like especially in dealing with men because I have been sexually assaulted on more than one occasion, mm-hmm. and so. I'm kind of in a weird position because I have this profile and a lot of people, you know, talk to me on social or whatever. And a lot of, oh, you're so beautiful. I appreciate the compliment, but it makes me uncomfortable because mm-hmm. I don't have a good relationship with men, especially older men, especially men that I don't know. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, and then people like, they're like, oh, don't be like that. I'm like, that shit makes me uncomfortable though. And I just mm-hmm. shut down. I literally, like, if people are too much and they're just too like, whether it's in person, like if I was at the club dancing with somebody or whatever, and if they're too, I just like, I like retreat.
I'm
I just
the same
like,
way. Yeah.
I don't know. I just come into like this shell. And mm-hmm. I think that was my way to respond to what was happening to me when I was younger. Mm-hmm. As I retreated, I went in like this little shell, this little turtle mm-hmm. shell. And I still do that now to this day. So mm-hmm. is like, much as I have this, I think, this perception of being like strong and like damn, she'll cuss anybody or whatever. Oh yeah, I be cocooning into my little show hard. Like when I seriously like that is my coping mechanism, and that's when I'm triggered. I shut down. So that I'm trying to be rude or that I'm not trying to accept a compliment or anything is that
you're in survival mode.
I'm survival mode. I'm scared. Yeah,
but you know it's perfectly acceptable. Like before you dance with someone or before you have a conversation with someone to lay down the game rules. You know mm-hmm. to say you know mm-hmm. this is what makes me feel safe. Can you do this? And if they say, no, that sounds kind of, you know, I can't do that. Then, you know, mm-hmm. then, you know what, maybe this is not a space that we need to exist in.
Right.
You know, you have that right to do that and mm-hmm. to create a space where you're comfortable when it's dancing, when someone is chatting with you on social media, you know, mm-hmm. it's healthy boundaries.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important. I think even on social media or in person or whatever, for women to stand up and have a voice and not be scared to say, hey, that was not cool what you just did. Mm-hmm. I think so many times you're like, oh, well, I don't want to complain, or like, I don't want to be looked at like mm-hmm. a bitch, or I don't want to be looked at like I'm tripping.
Yeah, yeah. That's common.
Yeah. Yeah. And so we just stay quiet when really we're uncomfortable.
Even or simple things like when men go in to hug you. Mm-hmm. You know, like, and I never noticed this, but, you know, a lot of people men will kiss you on the cheek mm-hmm. when they go in to hug you. And like my husband, like, he shouldn't be kissing you on the cheek. You're married, you know, and I never really noticed because like to me, I'm supposed to be open and willing, you know, for you to do that social, you know, mm-hmm. Norm with me. But I really don't like it.
Yeah,
you
know,
and so, church hug.
Yeah,
but what? No, actually, now I ask: is it okay if I hug you?
Yeah,
you know, and mm-hmm. some people will ask me as well: is it okay? Because I put on Facebook, you know, I'm really not a hugger. Mm-hmm. You know, so if I see you and I don't hug you, it's not because don't take it personal. Right. You know, it's just that I like my space. Mm-hmm. You know, but asking people and creating that narrative and that dialogue so people know, you know, to be respectful of your space or your hula hoop.
Absolutely. Yeah. Right. Yeah. See, the thing I don't like. Hugging older men, like my ex-husband's dad, he's like a big hugger and he's always like, oh, and it was always like this weird thing, but I'm like, I had to tell my husband, like, yo, you don't understand mm-hmm. what it literally makes me want to like crawl inside of my own body and just mm-hmm. hide and cry. Like, I don't like hugging older men. I don't fucking like it. Uh-huh. Like, I don't want to do it. And I know that it looks like I'm rude or whatever. I'm not being rude, but I just really, we need to find a happy medium here because I can't do this. Like, and it is, and that's how I feel. I'm just like, I have a thing. Let me figure it out. But mm-hmm. Yeah, so we are going to go ahead and wrap up. It's been a really good conversation. I feel like it's a conversation that needs to continue to happen. Oh, yeah. Be vocal, you know, stand up for others too. I mean, whether you've had trauma or not, I think it's important that we all kind of at least allow people to own their truths, whatever that may be, mm-hmm. And respect that. So I'm going to go around the table, give everyone an opportunity just to wrap up, say what they want to say, let you know how you can find them on social media. Jalen, we'll start with you.
Hello. That was very moving for me. Like everything. Yeah, I'm just blown away right now. But just don't be afraid to reach out to somebody, anybody for help. Like, doesn't matter if you feel like it was your fault, it's not your fault. No means no, and that's it, period. But you can find me on Facebook at Jalyn Suddeth, J-A-L-Y-N Suddeth, S-U-D-D-E-T-H on Facebook. And on Instagram, you can find me at JustJ21.
My turn. All right. Thank you for having me, by the way. And thank you for, this is like a great conversation. And I think even after you guys get off of here, continue to talk about it.
Oh, yeah.
Continue to bring it up. Google any resources in nearby in your town. There's a place you can go to where there's help. There's hotlines. Just Google it. They still use Google, right?
It's still yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Ask Siri. You can find me at Native Child Brown on Instagram or Facebook or BTF Native. I'm also, I mentioned that I co-host a podcast.
No.
I co-host a podcast called Blue Tigers Fitted. So you can find me there on Sundays.
Nice.
Yeah, that's it. But thanks for having me.
Yes, thank you so much for coming. It's been really great.
Yeah, this conversation was very enlightening. I'm glad we had this conversation. I'll just say really, 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 really quick. The last part, I had a quick situation where I was in a relationship and he tried to, he actually did hit me, but I picked up a knife and I stabbed him. I'm just going to be honest.
Wait.
But we'll go back into that.
Well,
damn,
we got to wrap up. I need to know more about this. We will talk about this next time.
Maybe we can have you back and we can talk about what happens when you fight back immediately. Okay.
Yeah.
So you can find me at Tisha J Red, T-I-C-I-A-J Red everywhere. Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. And you can find me at my podcast, The Single Versus Mary Show. When we get back on, we took a little break, but we coming back eventually. But yes.
Cool. All right. And it's your girl AB. You can find me on Instagram, TheeebestAmber, or on Facebook, Amber Bone. Make sure you follow the page, 30 Flirty and Thriving. We out. The go getters, the handle business, the up and rising. This is 30 Flirty and Thriving. The motivation, the dedication, the inspiration. This is 30 Flirty and Thriving. Entrepreneur, making her own moves, making her